Good morning and welcome to episode one of our monthly live Q&A sessions with Cintons Family Team. My name is David Pritchard, Head of Marketing at Cintons. Just wanted to give you a quick reminder that these sessions have come about due to the volume of questions we received for our live Q&A session during the recent Good Divorce Week. We weren't able to answer anywhere near the amount of questions we received, so we thought these sessions would therefore be a great idea moving forward. And we're going to be running them at 10 a.m. on Teams live on the third Friday of each month moving forward from today. So Sophie Dodds, who is a solicitor in the family team here at Cintons, is going to be answering three of your questions today. So without any further ado, I'm going to pass you straight over to Sophie for question one of three. Sophie, good morning and over to you.
Hello and welcome to the first episode of the Family Law Q&A. As David mentioned, we will be running these sessions on the third Friday of every month. So if you do have a question that you would like answered, then please don't hesitate to submit it. David will give you the details as to how to do that after this Q&A. So the first question today is, I was married abroad. Can I still divorce in the UK? So the simple answer is yes, but the court do require your marriage certificate. And if this is in another language, then this will need to be translated. In order to get divorced in England and Wales, both parties must be habitually resident or domiciled in England and Wales. This means that England or Wales must be your main home, where your life is based and where you intend to remain. If one party has moved overseas, then the other party must call England or Wales their home. If the other party is living abroad, you will need to serve the divorce documents onto that party and prove that they have received the documents so you can move on to the next stage of the divorce. You will therefore need to know the other party's contact details, hopefully and ideally their address, their email address and telephone number. If you do not know this information, which may be the case if they are living abroad and perhaps you have been separated for some time, then you will need to instruct your solicitor to contact a tracing service to obtain this information. Question two, I have property prior to my marriage. Is this counted in divorce? So when resolving financial and property issues on divorce, parties should exchange full and frank financial disclosure. This should include all assets in that party's name at the time of exchange. If the property purchased prior to the marriage is still owned, then this will need to be disclosed. A financial settlement would be based on the party's needs. A property purchased prior to the marriage would be usually classed as a non-matrimonial asset. However, depending on whether there is a sufficient amount in the matrimonial pot to meet the party's needs, non-matrimonial property may need to be factored in. This could include assets which have been purchased prior to the marriage and also post-separation. The third and final question today is, how is my pension affected by divorce? So a pension is considered an asset like any other asset is, such as property or bank accounts. And it all forms part of the matrimonial pot to be divided on divorce. The value of the pension will need to be obtained at the time that you exchange financial disclosure. Dividing a pension is based on needs, and the aim is to ensure that both parties' needs can be met on retirement. It is often that one party has a larger pension than the other, and in order to meet the needs of both parties, it may be necessary for that pension to be shared. This can be in the form of a pension attachment order or a pension sharing order. So pension attachment orders are rare these days as they rely on the party transferring the pension to retire. They are not often used in practice now as it has been found that the transferor would deliberately delay their retirement to prevent the other party receiving their pension share. Pension sharing orders are a lot more common now, and they involve taking a chunk of one pension, usually the larger pension, and adding it to the pension pot of the other party. This means that the party benefiting from that pension share is not reliant on the other party retiring, and they can choose to take their pension when they wish. This is usually at state pension age, which is either age 65 or age 67. So that is all of our questions for today, and we will be running another session in January. So like I said, if you have any questions that you do want answering, then please feel free to submit them. And I look forward to seeing you in January, and have a lovely Christmas.
Thanks, Sophie. Appreciate that. Just so you are aware, the firm's working hard to produce and deliver useful and relevant content, articles, blogs, podcasts, videos, all of which can be found on our website, www.sintons.co.uk, should you wish to take a look. And you can also follow the family team on Twitter at Sintons Family. If you'd like to discuss anything Sophie's raised today further, please don't hesitate to get in touch with her or a member of the team. Sophie can be contacted via telephone 01912 267878 or via email sophie.dots@sintons.co.uk. Our next session will be with you on Friday the 21st of January 2022 at 10 a.m, and I'll send the link round to you nearer the time. All that's left for us to say is thank you very much for listening this morning. Stay safe, everyone. Have a very happy Christmas and a great new year from all of us at Sintons. Thank you.